Okay, hello again, everybody. I'm Rick Sanchez. This is Direct Impact, and this is what we're going to be talking about.
Got to get decent, courageous, visionary people who believe in something bigger than their own ego.
He is right. He is super smart. He is not afraid to speak the truth. He's a Harvard professor, and he's running to be the president of the United States. Cornel West joins me here on Direct Impact. Let's do this. You know, I thought a lot about what we wanted to start the show with today, and I was thinking to myself, as the world looks to the United States and wonders what the hell is going on, here is what they're seeing. They see two men who happen to be the oldest presidents in the history of the United States, and now they want to do it again. One seems to be a little off his rocker, and the other seems to need a rocker. They represent two parties that are generally the same and tend to offer up mostly status quo people with status quo ideas. And that's the truth. That's the way most Americans see it. Both parties lie, both love to play up narratives that divide rather than unify. Again, that's the way most Americans see it. So why? Why does it continue? Let me give you an example, by the way, of what I'm talking about. The whole country knows that there's something horribly wrong with the president's mental and physical fitness. I mean, there's no escaping that, right? And it's killing his polls, and it's killing his chances of winning the presidency, and not to mention it's killing his party now too. So, given that scenario, you would think, right, that Republicans would just shut up, leave it alone. Shakespeare said what? Leave well enough alone, but they can't. They can't help themselves. They're starving for the spotlight, starving for attention. So yesterday, I'm sitting here watching the news, and these guys, they call a group news conference yesterday to say, I told you so, about Biden, even though really they didn't tell us so. Here it is.
Good morning. There is no longer any doubt that Joe Biden is unfit to be our commander-in-chief. The Biden White House, far-left House Democrats, and the mainstream media are in complete disarray because they know this to be true and have been caught participating in one of the greatest media cover-ups in American history. For the last 3.5 years, House Republicans and the American people have been demanding details about Joe Biden's mental and physical decline.
No, they haven't been doing that. Look, not for nothing, but the Republican Party has been having hearings on Capitol Hill, tons of hearings, one after another, where they seem to be saying, we all watch this with our own eyes. Do they think we don't remember? They said just the opposite. In fact, they described Joe Biden as some evil genius who had masterminded and negotiated these elaborate deals and contracts with the Chinese government worth millions of dollars. And they said he did the same with several other countries, including Ukraine. They made him out to be some incredibly corrupt, which still may be true, but yet sophisticated wheeler-dealer. And now because everybody else is saying it, oh, they portray him as some doddering old man who can't even put a sentence together. Look, which is it? Because it can't be both. Manila, let me bring you in on this. You know, as I was watching this, I couldn't help but think of that, and I wonder what your reaction is.
Well, Rick, I want to be fair to the Republicans here. I think all of these House committee hearings that they were holding regarding Biden were all based on factual, at least some part, factual events that they can prove from Joe Biden's younger days, either, you know, from when he was a senator or definitely when he was vice president. And the envoy basically to Ukraine at the time, where we heard him on video threatening to withhold money and funding to Ukraine unless the AG there got fired. So there is some legitimacy to what they were saying before, but that was before. That was the guy that was threatening, the Joe Biden that was threatening people in town halls to like push-up competitions. Well, that Joe Biden is long gone, so I think that's fair.
Well, what about my point about when you have an opponent and he's struggling, leave him alone. I mean,
well, I agree with that. Let him dig his own grave. No pun intended. I'm not wishing him
harm. No, I know what you mean. Right, just strategically.
Yes, strategically let him dig his own grave, let him make his own bed with his stutters and his fumbles. Let him do that. Just like President Trump has been kind of mum, mostly mum, yeah, since the debate, because he's letting Joe Biden try to muddle through and have the negative media focus on Joe Biden and not him at this time, which is why we've not heard Donald Trump announce who his VP pick is. And he will announce that at the Republican convention next week in Milwaukee. So I think as far as the media goes, they have been accusing what we've been seeing as first a Republican spin, because Joe Biden is vibrant and vigorous and virile and all of that right, manly stuff. But now it's a Russian conspiracy that the Russians are, they're pulling out the old playbook. And now that the Russians, they're saying the Russians are amplifying that Joe Biden's condition
really
is bad as we see it. This is a brand new thing in the past 24 hours.
I hadn't heard that. I imagine. And if it's not the Russians, it's the Iranians. And if it's not the Iranians, it's the Palestinians. And if it's not the Palestinians, it's the Chinese. Because we have to live in a world where we only have enemies, and those are the people that we seem to blame everything
right
on. You're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. Manila, pleasure. A little shortened segment today because I want to spend some time with an old friend. Thanks so much for sticking around. I'll look forward to seeing you again tomorrow, partner. Look, you know, this conversation Manila and I were just having, the real question in all of this, no matter how you see this or spin this, is why do we have to choose, seriously, why do we have to choose between these two parties right now? Whether you like Biden and you think he's not crazy or too old, or you like Trump and you think he's not too crazy, whatever. When right now 25% of Americans hate both parties and both candidates. That's a real Gallup statistic, by the way. 25%. So why can't we hear the voices of other candidates? Why have we gotten to this point in this country? Why can't other ideas be thrown into the ring? Well, that's what I'm going to be talking about today. And we're going to be joined by presidential candidate, former Harvard professor, Cornel West. You will want to hear what he has to say, so whatever you do, as you look at him right there, his smiling face, do not go away. We'll be right back. It's a great pleasure right now as we welcome you back to welcome to our show, Dr. Cornel West, former Harvard professor, running for the presidency of the United States. And, you know, it's interesting being able to talk to, I think, someone who's an old friend in many ways, because as many of you may know, and I'm sure he remembers, that when I worked at CNN and I worked at NBC and I worked at Fox and all those years, one of the things that I remember was having the opportunity to interview Dr. Cornel West. And I've always thought that he was one of the few real truth tellers in this country. There aren't enough of them. And you know, and Dr. West, as I'm thinking about what I'm saying to you, I'm thinking to myself that I said something at the beginning here where I said, we've become a country where our politicians are all status quo people with status quo ideas. And you, sir, happen to be just the opposite of that. Do you understand where I'm going with that?
No, indeed. But one, though, brother, you're just so very kind and generous, and we have precious memories of those days at CNN and Fox and others. But the crucial thing is you are as strong and fresh as ever, and that's a beautiful thing to be. Because when I think of Brother Biden, Brother Trump, I say to myself, they both ought to read King Lear and learn how, in fact, a powerful man and ruler becomes a human being out of humility, to move from hubris to humility, and to move from lying and mendacity to integrity and genuine generosity. That's a spiritual issue. That's a moral issue. You understand it well with your own background. You got to wrestle with allowing that integrity to emerge. And all of us have that struggle on the battlefield of our own souls. But when you look at Biden and Trump, it's very clear that they've hemorrhaged. They've hemorrhaged in so many different ways. There's a certain addiction to mendacity and lying in Trump's, on the side of Trump, where there's no accountability, say and do anything he wants. And Biden is told only the good stuff and not really the full stuff, which is who he really is. Everybody's got a good and bad in one sense, you see.
Maybe it's because we, you know, I think one of the things that we all ought to do in this country, hell, in this world, is, you know, look at everything through our own imperfections and look for better things that where we can create maybe a better world. And I'm not seeing that. And when I use the term status quo with you, I've been doing a lot of reading lately, and I was thinking to myself, you know, it's the same people. The guys who are in the State Department today were there with Bush and with Trump and with Clinton and with Obama, and the same people in the CIA were there with all the, and the same people in Treasury. And after a while, it's like, we ain't growing. We ain't changing. I know I'm saying ain't, and I probably shouldn't say that because I'm a granddad now, but, you know, we're not moving forward, Professor.
You're absolutely right. I mean, we're in a deep moment of spiritual decay and moral decadence. We want to be honest about that. You were talking about your precious grandchild, and we all have kids and grandchilds, trying to give them examples of what it is just to be decent, and what it is to be consistent, and what it is to be compassionate. See, those are the things that are being pushed to the margin. It's all now just Machiavellian talk about power and spectacle and putting people down and trashing other people and being so obsessed with attention. And you say to yourself, what about maturity? Go back to Shakespeare again when Edgar says, ripeness is all. Now, what is ripeness? Maturing over time. What happens to an empire when it grows powerful and grows rich, but does it grow up? Does it really grow up? And one sign of growing up is not just humility, but concern with the vulnerable. When you become indifferent to the vulnerable, when you become indifferent to those who are suffering, the great Rabbi Heschel used to say, indifference to evil is more insidious than evil itself. That's Heschel's Judaic understanding of maturation. We could go to Martin King and see similar insight. We can go to Gandhi and see similar Hindu insight. We can go to bell hooks and see similar Buddhist insight, or Ambedkar to see serious Buddhist insight. But it's a deeply human affair. We're losing sight of our common humanity, though, brother. And that's not just a platitude. That's real.
As I hear you speak, I'm wondering why we're not allowed to give import to your candidacy as we should. I would give you more import than I'm giving to any other candidate, or certainly as much. Do you feel personally cheated? I know our country is. Do you?
Well, no, not really. I mean, anytime an empire is in decay, it means that they are far removed from the best that went into the making of that empire. Because every empire's got some positive elements. The problem is you got to deal with the domination and oppression, and you got to deal with the poverty and the suffering. You got to deal with the militarism. You got to deal with various forms of xenophobia. But there is a best of America. You know, Cesar Chavez is the best. Martin King is the best. This sister here, Harriet Tubman, she's the best. John Coltrane. They are as American as Donald Trump.
Yeah.
But they're as American as apple pie, but if we no longer have access to their examples, access to their love, their truth, their justice, then all we have access to are the lies, the revenge, the retribution, and in the end, that's just the seeds of destruction, brother. And you know the great American novel, Moby Dick, is about what? America's addiction to self-destruction. That's Ahab. Melville wrote that at 31 years old, man. That's deep insight. We can go to Toni Morrison, similar kind of insight. Yeah. How do we bring that into our politics? How can our politicians be as truth-telling as our artists have been?
You know, you use the word destruction, and as you say that, something clicked in my head, and I said, well, you know, it would be bad enough to destroy yourself, but we now seem to be planning to destroy the world. The fact of the matter is we're itching to start a war with China. Why? Who knows? We're itching to start a war with Russia, who, by the way, has more nuclear warheads than we do, by essentially sabotaging at least three attempts so far to stop the war in Ukraine. Look what's happening right now with NATO. Same with Iran, by the way. And, of course, the Gaza situation, it speaks for itself.
And ongoing. You can actually see the precious babies being killed. And we would say this about anybody, babies. The Palestinian baby has the same value as an Israeli baby, same value as a Cuban baby, same value as an Ethiopian baby, same value as an Iranian baby. We want to be morally consistent.
If you were president, how would you be able, you know, we use the word status quo. You know, when I think of our foreign policy, when I think of our State Department, I think status quo. How would you tackle that? Because you know if you did, you would get a lot of resistance.
Oh, indeed. I mean, and nothing wrong with resistance. You just have to be resilient. But no, you see, I am an anti-imperialist presidential candidate, which means that I'm running to head the empire in order to dismantle the empire. I don't think that America needs 800 military units around the world, 130 special operations in over 100 countries, and 62 cents of every discretionary budgetary dollar going to the military. We've got 62% of our fellow citizens doing what? Living paycheck to paycheck. Where is the money, the trillions of dollars that goes to war? How would that money be better spent? We need quality communities. We need quality education. We need a right to health care. We need a right to housing. We don't need to have a million fellow citizens living on the streets in the richest empire in the history of the world.
Does it
war priorities, brother? War priorities.
Does it surprise you that suddenly the Democratic Party? I'm sure if you're like me, you grew up a Democrat, you know, or looking at the Democratic Party as the, you know, today. Trust me, that's not where I am today. By the way, I'm not on the other side either. I criticize.
No, you think for yourself. For yourself, independent.
But did you ever think that the Democrats would be such warmongers as they've become as a party?
Well, you remember Martin King had to break with LBJ because he was lying to hide the crimes of the Vietnam War.
Yeah, you're right.
You need to know what I mean? Very much so. The sad thing is that both parties have been tied to big money and big military, and you have to be truthful about both. That doesn't mean they're exactly identical, but it certainly means that both have consensus when it comes to military adventurism around the world. Look at the various U.S. government interventions in Latin America over the last 50 years. That was Republicans as well as Democrats.
Yeah.
It could be Guatemala in 54, it could be Brazil in 65, Dominican Republic in 65, and go on and on.
Allende and Chile, and you're right.
Chile in 73. Oh, my God.
You mentioned Guatemala in 54, 200,000 people dead because we decided we didn't like the person they elected, and we decided to go in there and take them out. And it's a story that's too often untold. And by the way, when I tried to tell that story at CNN, they said, you're out of here. We don't want an anchor who criticizes our country. But I criticize my kids, it doesn't mean I don't love them.
That's exactly right. Well, see, this is what I mean by maturity and humility. When you love folk, you respect, protect, and also correct. And if you love your country, you protect, you respect, but you also correct.
Yeah.
And that's the only way in which you continually mature. Once you give up on maturation, brother, you got stagnation or destruction. And we're living it in a moment in which, you know, the United States is the 68th empire in the history of the species. There's been 70. And all empires sooner or later begin to decay as they have military overreach abroad and corruption of elites across parties and the frustration of citizenry and the hunger for a strong man, usually not a strong woman, but a strong man. That's where the patriarchy comes in, we know. But the strong man is tyrannical, and usually that tyrant goes back to really Plato's Republic. That tyrant himself is so shot through with a narcissism and a masochism and an inability to engage in introspection. And what does it do? He leads the place off the cliff. Now, you said before, it's the world we're talking about. We got an ecological catastrophe we've got to come to terms. If the nations can't respect each other and work together to deal with ecological catastrophe, what are we really talking about?
Yeah.
But the good news is there's always a cloud of witnesses, a wave of people of all colors, all genders, all sexual orientations, all religions who are willing to be courageous, compassionate, sacrificial, truth-telling, justice-seeking, and joy-spreading. You got to keep the joy in it, brother.
5 minutes left in this interview, and I want to ask you about two things that are in the news right now. One of them, obviously, is NATO, because it's taking place as we speak. And the other one, of course, is going to be the condition of our president. Why don't you say we start with NATO? I'm curious about what you're thinking. As I look at NATO meeting this week here, no less in the United States, I see a group of nations who are trying to define themselves by separating themselves from other nations. They seem to be saying, we don't want anything to do with India or Russia or China or Iran or South Africa or many of these countries who are on the other side. Instead of saying, come join us, let's be big, they seem to be saying, let's be small and we're going to be against you. That's the message I'm getting. How am I wrong?
No, well, I tell you, Du Bois wrote an essay in 1945 in Chicago Defender. He said he sees a World War III coming about with the United States trying to stranglehold Russia and suppress China. That's 1945. And Du Bois wasn't right on everything. Nobody has a monopoly on truth. But it's very deep insight he has, because you're absolutely right. Of course, you can see the attempt to counter the emergence of various countries in the global South.
Yeah.
And you can see attempts to act as if we're not in this thing together as human beings across global South, global North. No, it's going to be the predatory capitalist ones that have histories of very ugly colonialism that still want to hold on, rather than embracing each and every one of the 192 precious nations and countries that constitute this globe. But you're absolutely right. But another place to start, though, is George Kennan's powerful piece in February, New York Times, 1997, when he said, it is an heir to expand NATO. Now, George Kennan was the very mind that brought not just containment and anti-communist policy, but NATO 1949 together. And again with the British in 1947, as you know. And what was he responding to? The collapse of the Soviet Empire.
Yeah.
With all of its repression, all of its domination. How do you bring them in? We didn't do that.
Yeah, Putin himself said recently, twice, I've come to the United States and said, make me a part of NATO. Instead of making you your enemy, let me be a part of what you guys do.
Exactly.
And they said, no, we don't want you to be. Why? Why would we not? I would invite Xi. I would invite the Ayatollah. I would invite. Why not? Disagree with them to their face, not away from them, don't you think?
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. But part of it has to do with orthodoxy, dogmatism, narrowness, and especially those elites that constitute the Washington consensus that you've talked about in your presentation. No, brother, they just locked into that kind of parochialism, and also tied to the big corporate interests and the war manufacturers and others.
Well, Peyton here, my floor director, is giving me the big two, which means we got 2 minutes left. So I think let me leave the last 2 minutes for this very important discussion about something that's taking place in our country right now, the condition of our president. What is your take on what we as a nation, what his wife, maybe the people around him, should be telling, as you would say, Brother Biden?
Yeah, we got to pray for the brother and Jill and the others. It's clear he doesn't have both paddles in the water. This is a form of elderly abuse to have him out there acting as if he's 41 rather than 81. I'll go back again. Read King Lear, Biden, please. Come to terms with Father Time. Come to terms with decline. All of us are in the very moment that we're born, we're old enough to die, and we're already in the process of a certain kind of decline, and it becomes crystallized by the time you get a certain age, and it's clear that it's highly crystallized, and it's time for him not just to move aside, but then he's got to deal with a Democratic Party that has its own corruption. Then the lies been told about Biden as if he somehow was on the cutting edge of freshness and please don't believe our lying eyes. That's what we're told. Please.
It's a lot like watching a Fellini movie with all the different crazy
Trump leading the country toward the second civil war, Biden leading the country toward World War III, and both of them have been in such spiritual and physical decline.
And
we're supposed to just sit there and take it. No.
Yeah. And meanwhile, we're seeing poll numbers where people are looking at both and saying, I'm not even sure I want to vote for either of these guys. It's a fascinating situation in our history. Then we have people like you. As we leave this conversation, let me just say that I'm sure I speak for millions of Americans when I say, it would be so good for our country to have you standing there toe-to-toe at these debates with these two gentlemen, and not just you, but others as well who may
absolutely.
Have different perspectives. And we're
absolutely.
Being denied that. And I, for one, believe the more voices, the better. And that's the reason maybe we're not growing, as you and I said earlier. Professor, thank you for taking time to join us.
It's always a blessing, though, brother. And you stay strong. Absolutely. It's always a joy to be in conversation with you. And God bless you and your loved ones, man.
You're a good man. Thank you so much. God bless you as well. That's our show. Remember to always look outside your own boxes. Truths don't live in boxes, as we like to say around here. I'm Rick Sanchez, and we'll be looking for you next time.